I think. When one has been angry for a very long time, one gets used to it. Then it becomes comfortable, like old leather. And finally, it becomes so familiar that one can't ever remember feeling any other way.
I'm Andrea Johnson, and you're listening to Retro Rockets. Join us as we explore the deep heritage of science fiction and fantasy, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Welcome aboard. My guest today is Keith DeCandido. I'm sure you've seen his columns at Tor.com. Today, we're talking Strange New Worlds, Picard, Enterprise, Deep Space Nine, Red Shirts, and the optimism of Star Trek and the messiness of humanity. Hi, Keith. Welcome to Retro Rockets. I'm really thrilled to talk to you today. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I'm just this guy. I'm a writer of many different things. I have been a fan of Star Trek pretty much since birth. Earlier, if my parents were to be believed, I was born in 1969, so my parents watched Star Trek, so they watched the show while my mother was pregnant with me. I grew up watching reruns of the original series on Channel 11 in New York City. That was our nightly ritual. We would come home, we would watch Star Trek at 6 o'clock, and then we'd have dinner at 7. That was what we did. And I devoured whatever ancillary material I could pick up. I bought the DC Comics when they started their comics line in the 80s. I read Star Trek novels constantly. I went to see the movies when they opened. And then have enjoyed all the spinoffs and such. And then once I barreled into adulthood, I started actually writing for and about Star Trek for a variety of sources. I've written a bunch of novels for Simon & Schuster. I've done short stories both for Simon & Schuster and more recently for Star Trek Explorer magazine. I've contributed to Modiphius' role-playing games with some stuff. And I've done some comic books for both Wildstorm and IDW. And most recently, the thing I've done the most often is writing about Star Trek for a number of sources, primarily Tor.com.
And we're going to get to Tor.com in just a minute, because that is where I found you and where I've been following you the most. But other than Tor.com, where can our listeners find you? Do you have a website? Are you on social media?
I have a really terrible website. It's decandido.net. I've been meaning to upgrade it for years now, and someday I might even do that. My original plan to do so fell by the wayside, as did the plan after that one. And the plan after that one, it's been a rough ride. But if you go to decandido.net, it will at the very least link you to all the various places I can be cyberstalked. I'm fairly active on Facebook, moderately active on Twitter. That's been less and less lately. Somewhat active on Instagram. And I also, because I'm old, have a blog, which I update somewhat regularly as well. I also have a Patreon, where I do TV and movie reviews, excerpts from my works in progress, vignettes featuring my original characters, because I don't just write about Star Trek, I write other things too, including stuff in my own universes, and also cat pictures, because
I'm all about, that's the only reason I'm on Twitter anymore, is just the cat pictures.
Yes, that's what the internet is for. I also have a YouTube channel where I read my short fiction. I started that in 2020 during the apocalypse, in order to, just for something A, for me to do, and B, for other people to do while they were stuck at home. I read pretty much all the short stories I had extant at that point through 2020. Mm-hmm. In 2021, I specifically read the novellas that I did for the Starfleet Corps of Engineers series, one of the Star Trek things I did. I was the editor of that line. It ran from 2000 to 2008. And I also wrote several novellas for that series, and I did readings of those throughout 2021. I took 2022 off, and then I revived it again. And currently, the YouTube channel, which is called Crad Readings, it was originally called Crad COVID Readings, but I decided to stop using that. I still read, you know, it's once a month, middle of each month, I release a new episode where I read one of my short stories, of which I've written over 100 at this point. So there's, and there's a bunch I still haven't gotten to yet. So I've got enough to keep me going for.
So we have a lot of wonderful videos in our future is what I'm hearing.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. I've really been enjoying all of your columns at Tor.com. And for folks that are listening and don't know, Keith, you write what I like to call watch along articles, and it's probably like a fancy formal name for it. But you do these wonderful watch along article columns, and you're watching Strange New Worlds, you're watching Picard, you're doing a rewatch of Enterprise, which is like my husband's favorite Star Trek series. And yeah, I really enjoy your articles. There's a lot of passion in them and a lot of just references to what has come before. So I used to be a book blogger. And I have to ask you the same question that I used to always ask myself. What is it like to watch a show knowing you're going to write 1,500 words about it?
Not that different from what it's like when I'm not. So I started writing for Tor.com in 2011 when I did a Star Trek The Next Generation rewatch. They had just finished an original series rewatch, which was originally written by two writers who then quit after the second season. Two very good friends of mine who were also people who have written a lot of Star Trek novels, Dayton Ward and David Mack, took over for the third season.
I know David Mack. He's a sweetheart.
Yeah. Dave is one of my best friends. Yeah. We were each in each other's wedding parties. And in fact, the very evening that we are recording this, I am going to his house to feed his cats because he and his wife are out of town for a couple of days. So
he doesn't know me, but I met him at a convention years ago, and I still remember just how funny and nice he was.
Yes, he's like I said, he's one of my dearest friends, but anyway, Dave and Dayton, in order to do justice to Next Generation, it had to be twice a week, and they barely had time to do once a week with the original series, so they recommended me to do it, and. It is now 12 years later, and I have become one of the regular contributors to Tor.com. I'm pretty much their Star Trek guy. I have done, once I finish Enterprise, I will have done rewatches of all of the first two waves of series. I covered, after I did Next Gen, I did Deep Space Nine. And then I went back and I did my own of the original series, which not only included the three seasons from in the 60s, but I also did the animated series and then all of the movies that featured the original crew. I'd already covered the Next Gen movies with my Next Gen rewatch. So, and then stopped for a while. I did some other stuff. I did a Stargate rewatch. I did a Batman rewatch. I did a superhero movie rewatch, which I still revive every 6 months to a year or so to cover what's been, since that's an ongoing thing. And then we got to the beginning of 2020. And I wasn't going to do Voyager or Enterprise originally. And then we hit 2020, which was the 25th anniversary of Voyager's debut. And a lot of people whose opinions I respect were upset with me because I didn't like Voyager very much. These are people who grew up with Voyager. A lot of them were women who grew up in the 90s for whom Janeway was one of their heroes. Let me give this another chance. It's 25 years later, and I'm glad I did. Not just because 2 months after I started, the world ended, and this you know, having a Voyager rewatch to do twice a week is something that was very.
It gives us something to do.
For me as a writer and for the readers, also something that you know they could rely on happening twice a week.
And my goodness, the timing of writing about a crew that suddenly finds themselves isolated.
Yeah. That irony was not lost.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I'm glad I did for a number of reasons. The main thing, I still had a lot of these same problems with Voyager that I had the first time through, but I was in a better position to appreciate what they did well, not least because one of the things Voyager suffered from was not its fault. It was airing at the same time as Deep Space Nine was doing some of its best stuff. And
that was not Voyager's fault.
No. Although there are some things DS9 did that Voyager should have been doing, not the least of which was, you know, building a supporting cast. One of the things that bugged me then and continues to bug me now, and which I honestly went on about ad nauseum in my rewatch, is that there should have been no red shirts on Voyager.
You don't have an ensign closet because you cannot get more people.
Exactly. Anytime somebody dies on that ship, that person cannot be replaced. So that, and it should have mattered. And their over-reliance on the people in the opening credits is something that on that show with that premise was a particular problem. So that kind of bugged me a little. But there's lots of other things. There were a lot of really good individual episodes, really good characterization, some phenomenal acting. You know, there was a lot good about it, which I didn't appreciate the first time through. And then after I was done with that, I had to do Enterprise. How could I not? I'd already done literally everything else between the rewatches. And then since 2017, when Paramount Plus, it was called CBS All Access then, but since Discovery debuted and they've been, you know, there've been all these new shows, I have been reviewing each new show as the new episodes come out. So, you know, I've kind of got a complete set more or less. The only one I haven't done individual episode reviews of is Prodigy, because it's a kid's show. Tor was really only interested in just little overview pieces. Mm-hmm. So I've only done like four articles on Prodigy as opposed to individual episode reviews. But aside from that, I've covered every single episode of every single show. Or I will have once I'm done with Enterprise. I, as we record this, I am almost done with season 3.
And you've got a few seasons to go yet then.
No, just one.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Enterprise only ran for 4 years. Which is why I'm only doing it once a week. Cause I don't need to do it twice a week in order to get through it in a reasonable amount of time. It'll be about 2 years to complete.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
But the month of July 2023 will include the end of the third season, my third season overview, and the beginning of season 4. I'm also reviewing, like I said, I review the new episodes of the new shows as they come out. So I'm also doing new episodes of Strange New Worlds. And on top of that, and this was an unforeseen circumstance, I was given the gig to review Secret Invasion, the new Marvel show.
Oh, fine.
At the time that we decided, okay, yes, Keith, you'll review that one, I had no idea that it and Strange New Worlds were going to be airing new episodes at the same time. So my life is very busy.
You're a very busy writer right now.
Oh, yes. Plus, you know, I've got all these other things.
And only a million other things happening just like the rest of us. So I'm already a column behind, but that's okay. So I recently read... Forgive me, I read the article like 5 times because it was that good. Your article on Tor.com about Strange New Worlds, season 2, episode 2. I'm sure there is other powerful episodes, but this one and the way you wrote about it. The name of the episode is Ad Astra Per Aspera. And the way you wrote about it I'm assuming it was profound for you because just reading your words was a profound experience for me. And obviously my goal is to get everybody to watch that episode and read your article. So what was going through your mind while, not when you wrote the article, because I know that came later, but mm-hmm. while you were watching the episode, what was going through your mind?
Quite a bit. I got to see it twice. You know, in the privacy of my own living room. But I also there was a screening of the first 2 episodes here in New York City that they invited various folks to, which covered both the first episode, The Broken Circle, and then also at Astro Per Aspera on a big screen in a big room full of people, which was great. It was Well, one of the things that has bugged me over the last 5 or 6 years is a subset of the fan base that dismisses everything that has come out of the Paramount Plus shows. Well, these people don't understand Star Trek. Part of it is the fact that I've been listening to these complaints for over 40 years, because every time there is a new version of Star Trek, there is a vocal subset of the fan base that say, this isn't real Star Trek. How dare they? They've ruined my childhood. Yada, yada. They did this when the motion picture came out. They did it when Next Generation started, when Deep Space Nine started, when Voyager started.
Oh, I remember started, it when Deep Space Nine. Robot, yeah. I remember it when Deep Space Nine started. Like, how dare they film a show that takes place on a space station?
Right. And yeah. The same people 6 years earlier were saying, how dare they do a Star Trek show without Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, you know. And, you know, all the complaints about Discovery, which were exactly the same as the ones about Enterprise, and the same people, you know, and who are now saying that Enterprise was back when it was good. It's like, make up your minds. So anyway, there are several instances of recent Paramount Plus shows where I can say, yes, they understand Star Trek. Look at this. The entire fourth season of Discovery, certainly, which was entirely about exploring strange new worlds, seeking out new life and new civilizations, and boldly going where no one has gone before. And this episode of Strange New Worlds as well. It is everything that Star Trek has always been about optimism, about compassion, about equality, and also the fact that, you know, it's a process. It's not
it's not a place we're going to get and say, right, hey, now we're here.
Yeah. One of the problems I had with The Next Generation, for as much as I enjoyed it, was that it was created when Gene Roddenberry late in life was believing his own nonsense. And it was a little too far into the, oh yes, everything's perfect now, which misses the point. A lot of it, Star Trek is aspirational. And it's like an asymptotic curve. You're always getting closer and closer to it. You're never actually going to reach it, because, you know, perfection isn't something we've licked yet.
We wouldn't be people if we got there.
Exactly. And Ad Astra Per Aspera was very much about the process of struggling toward utopia. Showing the flaws, but also the importance of that hopeful future. I mean, one of the things that I've always liked about Star Trek is that the optimism and the aspirational aspect of it, that it's what humanity can become. One of my favorite moments in the episode was, and I mentioned this in my review, was when Una is describing what it was like when she first saw a Starfleet crew when she was like 5 or 6 years old, because that's the experience that seeing the Bridge of the Enterprise was for the people watching in 1966. You know, we've at a time of civil rights unrest, of a war, an endless war in Southeast Asia, and of a Cold War with Russia. And yet here you have an Asian guy, a Black woman, and a Russian guy on the bridge with the white American people all working together. And the fact that they're working together isn't weird and nobody's commenting on that. Like, that part is irrelevant. The fact that Sulu is Asian is less relevant than the fact that he, you know, has different hobbies. He likes botany and he likes playing with guns and he likes, you know, whatever this week's, you know, obsession is. The fact that Uhura is Black is less relevant than the fact that she likes music. And yes, Chekhov always made jokes about how things were a Russian invention, but
that was kind of a thing at the time.
Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't, you know, and for that matter, they're all working with the pointy-eared alien guy. And again, the fact that they're all working together isn't a big deal. You know, the fact, and that continued, you know, throughout all the spinoffs, the fact that, you know, Janeway was female, that Sisko was a person of color, that you know, and so on. None of that, and you see it on the current shows as well. The One of the things my mother said after an episode of Discovery that aired last year was that there were all these scenes of all these different women talking to each other, and there were different body types, they were different skin colors, they were different personality types, and absolutely none of them were sexualized. Which unfortunately for Star Trek was still pretty radical as of last year.
Yeah, but we can just be women talking about stuff. Like, it's right. Okay.
It's funny because I realized doing my rewatches, we had three shows in a row in the 90s where a character was cast, a female character was cast mostly on the basis of her looks. And in the case of two of them, I'm thinking Jadzia Dax and then Seven of Nine and then T'Pol. The casting was very much based on looks. Two of the three actors in question started out as models. And two of the three were ridiculously male gazed in terms of their costuming. And yet all three of them rose above that, partly due to the writing, mainly due to the excellent work that all three actors did. Jadzia Dax turned into one of the absolute best characters. Seven of Nine, was phenomenal. Everybody at this point knows what a great actor Jeri Ryan is, but nobody knew that in 1998, or whenever it was. She was just, the good looking woman who was on Falling Skies, and again, the same thing with T'Pol. That was such the costuming and the way they wrote the character initially. But the thing that I'm getting watching Enterprise again is how T'Pol is the only grown-up on the ship. and what a good job Jolene Blaylock is doing with it, despite the best efforts of the scripts to turn her into a sex object. But getting back to your original question, that diversity, that cooperation, and that fighting for individual rights is something that has always been a big part of Star Trek, of understanding and cooperation. And we saw that in droves in that episode. There've been a lot of,
you can spoil it. It's okay.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just saying that there's been a lot of this type of episode in Star Trek. The original series, you had Court Martial, you had Menagerie, to a lesser extent, Turnabout Intruder. Next Generation, of course, had Measure of a Man, which is, up until a couple of weeks ago was the gold standard for Star Trek trial episodes. The Drumhead also.
You're listening to Retro Rockets. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. My guest today is Keith DeCandido. You can listen to this and other episodes at retrorockets.podbean.com. We're also on Twitter at @RetroRocketsPod. The trial episodes, they're fascinating because it forces us to realize that the future is going to be messy. That we're people and we're messy.
Yeah. And we're always adjusting. One of the reasons why the U.S. Constitution is such a valuable document is that it has the capability to be amended, that it is not a static document, and the ability to change it as times change is a very important part of it because, people change.
People change. And what we want and what we need changes.
Plus, the other thing I loved about Ad Astra Per Aspera is that it was a kick in the nuts to one of the stupider things Deep Space Nine did, which was...
You're going to have to unpack that for in a few minutes.
Adores Deep Space Nine. I absolutely love Deep Space Nine, but the genetic engineering ban, and I get what they were thinking when they came up with it. It's like, well, we need a reason why all these 24th century humans look like 20th century humans.
So we're going to ban designer babies.
Yeah, basically. And I get where the instinct was coming from, but it doesn't make sense in the setting, especially since it's specifically about human genetic engineering and there's more to the Federation than humanity. And it's And it just didn't make sense. And they couldn't completely get rid of it because we know the law is still on the books 100 years hence, but at least they were able to question it. And it provides an opportunity for one of the other shows that takes place after Deep Space Nine to finally get rid of that stupid law. But at the very least, it did provide a critique of that in universe, which is fun. You know, it was enjoyable. It was necessary, I thought. You know, and a lot of the points that Ktul, the lawyer played by Yatidi Badaki, were great. You know, slavery was once legal. You know. Discrimination was legal, you know.
And look how far we've come, and look how far we can still go.
So, yeah, I when I saw the episode in the theater in the screening, it was so satisfying to get the audience reaction because they were cheering at all the right spots, like that line about how, you know, when Ktul is going on about what used to be legal. Plus, of course, the crowning moment of Austin where she makes it clear that she actually requested asylum, including using April's testimony, which was seemingly a mistake on her part, which wasn't. It was in addition to everything I've said, it's also a really well-written episode. It was a really beautifully constructed trial episode. You know, from a procedural point of view, there were issues, as there are with all of them. I mean, you know, the actual process of a trial, having served on four different juries in my time here in New York.
They have to tighten it for TV just a little bit.
Oh, yeah. The actual process of a trial is boring as hell and makes for terrible television.
Yeah, everything has to happen in 5 minutes on television because, I mean, what do you have, 44 minutes for the whole episode? So you've got to do that Law and Order thing where everything is scrunched down.
Yeah.
Oh, and, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
But it was beautifully put together. I just appreciated it from a writing standpoint, the way everything was constructed, you know, including April's testimony and the testimony of the other people. I loved the callback to Number One and Spock singing Model of Modern Major General in the Short Trek episode, which as a longtime Gilbert and Sullivan fan did my evil little heart proud. And it was funny because they actually released a clip, a preview clip before the episode aired that included Spock saying, you know, when Spock being asked the question is, was there any thing you thought she was hiding, and Spock says yes, and they leave it hanging in the clip. And my first thought was, he's going to mention Gilbert and Sullivan, isn't he? And sure enough.
And that's exactly what he did. Oh, that is fantastic. Oh man, I could just talk about that episode forever, but I got other stuff I want to ask you too. Okay. So one of the only things that I can think of that's better than getting to watch a ton of Star Trek is getting to play games where you get to create your own adventures. And while I was stalking you on your website and elsewhere, I saw that you had written a module for the Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. Yes. So what was it like to, well, I guess the smaller question is, what was it like to write that? And the bigger question is, how do you write something when you don't know how players are going to interact with it and are going to use it to create their own stories?
Basically what happened was I was asked to contribute to the Klingon Empire Core Rulebook when they released that. That came out in 2020. As I have written a great deal of my Star Trek fiction over the years has involved the Klingons. And I've always been really interested in the Klingon culture. In fact, one of my favorite episodes of Enterprise is another trial episode, which was Judgment, which was a really good look at the Klingon culture. So I did a lot of stuff, and that was all like historical stuff and some other things. So I did that, and then I they asked me if I wanted to do a module. I had written one role-playing game module before for the Firefly role-playing game. It was an absolute nightmare, and I hated every minute of it, and I swore I would never do it again.
So why'd you do it again?
Because I forgot I did that. And also as a chance to write Star Trek, you know, I can't pass this up. So I came up with the notion for Incident at Krov 3, which was a Klingon focused module. And then the actual writing of it was just awful, which is why I have a collaborator on it, which is Fred Love, who is one of the guys who writes game stuff for Modiphius. I needed him to shore me up on a lot of the other nonsense. Cause I don't have the bone in my head that can write that type of thing. I'm big on dialogue. I am big on character development. The plot is just the vehicle through which the characters are developed for me. So doing that was really hard for me. I didn't enjoy the experience very much. I'm glad I did it.
Glad you did it, but don't want to do it again.
No, there is one thing I have done for them, which are mission briefs, and that's just a little paragraph of just setups for games, and I'm going to be doing probably some more for them. But RPGs are just it's not my thing at all.
Hey, that's okay.
I'll be happy to do other stuff like the mission briefs or like contributions to core rulebook things that involve Star Trek history and such. It's funny I was doing a history of the Empire, and at the time they didn't have the license for Discovery or any of the other. Well, I mean, the other Paramount shows hadn't even like debuted yet, but I had to do a history of the Klingon Empire that did not include the war with the Federation that was chronicled in the first season of Discovery.
So how'd you do it?
Very carefully. I was able to make it work, but it was a challenge. It was a lot of tap dance,
a lot of tap dancing, a lot of specially constructed sentences.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting, very interesting. That just how different it is to write modules versus other types of just other things. It's really fascinating for me. So we've got a lot of Star Trek series that are running right now. I hate to say it, but I feel like we're kind of hitting this saturation point. That's all right. That's all right. What do you think is next for Star Trek shows, and what direction do you want them to go in?
One of the things I like is that it's going in multiple directions, and I think that's great. There's so much room for so many different things in the universe. One of the things that I particularly liked about Deep Space Nine was that it changed the definition of what Star Trek is. Up until 1993, Star Trek was, these are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. When Deep Space Nine debuted, that completely opened up. So you can do anything. I mean, look at what we've got now. We've got, stories in several different time periods, telling different types of stories, which is great. And they're all still Star Trek, Prodigy, Lower Decks, Guard, Stranger Worlds, Discovery, the upcoming Academy series that they're doing, if Legacy actually happens, which who the hell knows, these are all wonderful things that have lots of different storytelling possibilities. And I'd love to see other aspects of the Star Trek universe explored. One of the things I enjoyed about the first two seasons of Picard in particular was that it showed a wider range of things outside of Starfleet.
Yeah, that's so true. We really only see, typically, we're only seeing things that are happening within Starfleet, within, the stories of people who are within Starfleet. Well, there's all these other things happening, and yeah. People are living their lives, and people are, there's other important things, interesting things happening.
And apparently now the Section 31 project with Michelle Yeoh is supposed to be a movie, which is also fine. That's something that, or a miniseries. One of the reasons they've resisted, they haven't been able to do, for example, a Klingon series is because you have to put everybody in makeup. And that gets expensive. But if you just do it as like a 6-episode miniseries, like what Marvel's been doing with a lot of their Disney Plus shows, something like that, where it's not intended to go beyond.
Right. You can do a 6-episode limited series.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you can make the budget work for that. So the answer to your question is everything and anything. That's what's great about it. In the 2000s, when I was writing a lot of Star Trek fiction, we were doing a lot of different things. There was the New Frontier series that Peter David started doing in 1997, and that opened the door to do things that didn't directly tie to a particular TV show. Michael Jan Friedman did 6 books involving Picard on the Stargazer. I mentioned the Starfleet Corps of Engineers series that we did. There was a series of books involving Riker captaining the USS Titan after Nemesis came out. There was a series called Star Trek Vanguard, which took place alongside the original series that Dave Mack, Dayton Ward, and Kevin Dillmore wrote all the pieces of. I did a few books that took place on a Klingon ship. There's so many different things that we were doing in the fiction that we're now seeing the TV shows themselves adopting. And that's great. I mean, and as long as they continue to have people who understand what Star Trek is, which we're certainly seeing in the show. I mean, everything particularly in Stranger Worlds, Discovery, Prodigy, to a lesser extent in Lower Decks, and presumably in the Academy series, that as long as you know, it's still that aspirational, optimistic future, then I think, you know, it'll be great. And there's so many different possibilities. And I like the fact that they're embracing so many different types of things. Even in the 2 animated series are 2. I mean, yes, they're both animated, but they're completely different. Yeah. And both taking advantage of what animation can do in different ways.
And yeah, and there's things that you can do in animation that would either cost a fortune to do in live action or simply don't make sense. And you can also just have a lot of fun in an animated series and just kind of do ridiculous things. And it works in that world.
I am wearing my Kimmelu and Matt t-shirt.
Love it.
I absolutely love Kimmelu and Matt. They are like 2 of my favorite characters. And you could do them in live action, but it would be much less.
It wouldn't work as well. And I mean, that's the joy of using different, you know, okay, we're going to tell this story live action because it makes sense to do that. And we're going to tell this story animated because it makes sense to do that.
Having said that, I'm really looking forward to seeing Jack Quaid and Tony Newsom as the live action versions of themselves on Stranger Worlds. I have no idea how they're going to explain it, but it'll be fine.
You know what? I hope they don't explain it because that makes it even better.
I mean, obviously, some time travel has to be involved. Yeah.
No. Just. Don't even explain it. Just go with the story. All right. So as our episode's wrapping up here, we got just a couple of minutes left. Just in case our listeners did not jot down where we can find you online earlier in the episode, please let us know again. What's your website? Where can we find you on whatever social media is still going to be running in the next 6 weeks?
You go to decandido.net, my last name, DECANDIDO.net. Or just search for Keith DeCandido on the internet and you'll find it. I'm the only one you'll find. There are no other Keith DeCandidos in the world. I have a blog. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Patreon and Tor.com pretty regularly.
And I recommend everybody reading your columns on Tor.com because I have to say again, they are just fantastic.
Thank you.
So Keith, thank you so much for joining me today. It was an absolute pleasure to talk with you.
It was all mine. Thank you.
The Retro Rockets podcast explores the deep heritage of vintage and classic science fiction and fantasy. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our show is recorded, mixed, and produced by Andy Robbins. John Wenger is our special consultant. Our music is by Meter through a Creative Commons license, and Carolyn Baker designed our logo. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time on Retro Rockets.
Thank you.